And here we are on this October the 3rd in the year of our Lord, 2016. I'm Pastor Tom Baker, and you are listening to Law and Gospel. That's correct. And as we talk about Law and Gospel, we are talking about the readings for the 21st Sunday after Pentecost. And one of the readings is from the book of Ruth. Now, this is a great example of how a worldview ends up with a different application than does the Bible. So what do I mean by that? Well, you see, one of the things that we're trying to get across to the confirmands we're teaching at Trinity Lutheran Church in Orchard Farm is that it is not sufficient to even have the Bible memorized. If your application and interpretation of a text is wrong. For example, Ruth talks about a woman who has two sons. They marry folks from Moab, a different town, of course, different nation. They go and live there about 10 years, but the two sons die. So the woman was left without her two sons, and her husband had also died. So she gets ready to return to the country of Moab. Her daughters-in-law go with her, at least to the border. And the woman named Naomi says to the daughter-in-laws, "Go return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead." That's referring to her, to their husbands, "and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." Well, guess what? The one daughter decides to go back. And that's Orpah, O-R-P-A-H. But Ruth doesn't want to. Naomi says, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." And here's what Ruth says. "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And then when Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she said no more, and the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. Now that's the Old Testament reading. The rest of the story goes on, of course, talking about how we're dealing with a wonderful situation here about how God is taking care of us. And how is he taking care of us? Because there's nothing going to be happening to us that God is not involved. And therefore, it's very important to understand that when God is involved, we have nothing to fear. Now, Naomi really has something to fear because she's too old to get married. She's too old to have other sons. She even says that to the daughters-in-law. "What are you going to do? Wait around until my sons grow up and so you can have another husband?" No. She says, "You can marry whomever you want." But of course, the story goes on. But what is the book of Ruth often used for? It's these words from Ruth, where she says, "Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." I can't tell you how many times I've heard pastors use that as a sermon text at a wedding. You see, it's not inappropriate to talk about the people getting married that they certainly ought to have the same God, Jesus Christ. Because apart from Jesus Christ, wow, you can really have problems in a marriage. But is that the point of the book of Ruth? You see, there's not a problem here interpreting Ruth at this point. It's pretty clear what Ruth says. And out of her love for Naomi, she's going to return. But the book doesn't end at Ruth chapter 1, verse 19. It doesn't end simply because there's another part of the story. You probably all know it well. Ruth begins to gather food from the field because not all of, say, the wheat or whatever they're growing is 100% gathered up, and so the poor are allowed to go into the field and gather up remnants. Well, Boaz, who owns the field, recognizes that, and before long, he desires to marry Ruth. The problem is that Boaz has another person who really has the first choice of Ruth. And so what happens in chapter 4, Boaz goes to this person and he says, you know, the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, to perpetuate the name of her dead in his inheritance. Then the Redeemer said, and that's Boaz, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it. Now, that's the individual who does not want to marry Ruth because he already has children. And even though this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm this transaction, verse 7, chapter 4, the one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this is the manner of attesting in Israel. It's kind of like when you go and get somebody to sign a document indicating that, yes, you are the true signer. So the Redeemer, namely the one who could marry Ruth, says to Boaz, buy it for yourself. And he drew off his sandal. And then Boaz said, you are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, that was her husband, and all that belonged to Chilion and to Mahlon, those were the husbands of the daughter-in-laws. Also, Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought to be my wife. So, Boaz marries Ruth. And Naomi is very happy because she wanted to change her name to Bitter, because she was so bitter over the fact that nobody would continue the line of her family. And guess what Naomi says? This is verse 14 of chapter 4. Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer. She's talking to Ruth. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. And Naomi, therefore, when birth is given to Ruth, takes the child, lays him on her lap, and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi, and they named him Obed. Now, why is that important? Who is Obed? Obed, which means one who serves, is the father of Jesse. Well, who's the Jesse? He's the father of David. You know, there are some people when they write me a letter or an email, a lot of times the first part is, on various items of miscellanea. And then I always kind of like looking at the end of the letter to see what they're really about. What are they really asking me? Well, this is true in the book of Ruth. You have to go to the back, the very last verses. They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. And then what does verse 19 say? Now, these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Abinadab. Abinadab fathered Nashon. Nashon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. Guess what? Period. The book ends. Does this not tell you the proper interpretation of the book of Ruth? I'm not saying that you can't use parts of it for other purposes, such as maybe a marriage, etc. But the primary point is to continue the line to Jesus. The book of Ruth is all about Jesus. Had Ruth not remarried, Naomi had no other sons. Guess what? The line to Jesus is broken. And when the line to Jesus is broken, then the prophecy of him becoming a Messiah cannot take place. The promise to Abraham is out the window. This is why the book of Ruth is in there. See, this is what we call a worldview. And a worldview is based on narratives. What do I mean by that? For example, when you grow up, you kind of tend to follow what your parents do. For example, if it's cold outside and they put on coats, they're going to make sure you put on a heavy coat so that you are not cold. And have you ever seen people when they're walking along the sidewalk, they walk in such a way that they don't ever step on a crack? And then their children see that and they begin to follow that practice. And somebody may say to them, how come you don't step on cracks? Well, my dad never did. Oh, really? Well, why don't you? Oh, I don't know. It's just that that was the way my dad did it. In other words, the way you think is often based on a narrative that occurred earlier in your life. I know when I went to bed at night when I was a child, we had read Bible stories during the dinner time, but at night I was reading this book about a neighborhood of kids who were having a lot of fun, doing a lot of things. And at that age, I almost thought that this was true. This was really kids who existed. Now, later on, it became clear to me, no, this was just a fiction. But you become immersed with those kids. And therefore, you often do what they did. In other words, as a person grows in a family, if their parents skip church, then guess what the kids are going to do? If their parents are seen reading the Bible and also making it a part of, say, dinner, then the child's going to be reading the Bible. You get your worldview primarily from your experience. Now, unfortunately, we are born with a wrong worldview due to original sin inherited from Adam and Eve that we often don't think properly. Why is that? Because we often think on the basis of our experience. I'll give you a good example. If you want to get a promotion at work, how do you go about doing it? Do you find out a friend of the boss and tell them to say to the boss, you ought to give him a promotion? No, the best way to get a promotion is you do your work faithfully, you arrive at work on time, you stay longer than you should, and pretty soon you're recognized as someone, boy, he's a pretty good leader. Let's give him a promotion. In the world, in the temporal realm, you move ahead in life by what you do. Whether it's going from one grade to another, getting a promotion, taking out someone on a date, being real nice to them. The point I'm making is The worldview, therefore, often is carried over into religious matters. You can't believe how many people worry about going to heaven because they realize they're sinners. Well, isn't that obvious? Well, the only people that are going to heaven are sinners. But doesn't that mean that those should be the people going to hell? No, people don't go to hell because of sin in and of itself, or they go to heaven because they stop from sinning. People go to hell because of unbelief. And sinners go to heaven because of faith. That is, trusting the promises of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that on that cross, our sins were forgiven. In baptism, that forgiveness was applied to us. Faith was given to us. In the Lord's Supper, we have an additional assurance in receiving the very body and blood of Christ that, yes, salvation is still ours. So, when you read something like the book of Ruth, it's not enough to know the story. Part of the problem we have, particularly in the world today, is many of the stories of the Bible are not known. Concordia Publishing House, which is the official publishing house of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, does have a wonderful book. It's normally used for kids, but I always would buy it and give it to new adult confirmands because it starts with Genesis and goes through the whole Bible, talking about the specific people as well as the narratives. Now, it's shorter than the Bible because, for example, the feeding of the 5,000 is found in four Gospels. It only talks about it once. But at the end of reading that book, you now know who Bathsheba is. You now know who Boaz is. You now know who Ruth is. But is it sufficient to know that? No. That's what confirmation is about. What confirmation does, it takes those narratives and creates a worldview for you. Who of us have not lost loved ones? Who of us are wondering about the future? Who of us are recognizing, I can't handle life? Well, that's Naomi. That's Ruth. But you see, God had a plan for them. Now, I'm not saying that you should interpret Ruth to indicate that you personally are a person in line to the Messiah. That's Ruth and Naomi. But there are still promises connected to Ruth and Naomi. Look at how God took care of them, how his promises were fulfilled. That's a proper way of teaching the book of Ruth, that even though they didn't know what the future would be holding, even though Naomi wanted to call herself bitter because the loss of her husband and her two sons, and therefore there was no one to carry on the line, God had made a promise to Abraham that through his seed would come the Messiah. And therefore, it was really important that the book of Ruth is written, because it reminds us again that God is keeping his promises. And these promises are so important because apart from his keeping the promises, you and I would not be saved. This is kind of important. In fact, remember, Ruth is a Gentile. She's not even Jewish, but she's not the only one. In fact, if you look at the genealogy of Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 1, who's it start with? Abraham. He was the father of Isaac. And it goes down, and then guess where we get to? What I was reading from the book of Ruth, beginning with verse 4. Well, actually, it's verse 3. Perez, the father of Hezron, and Hezron, the father of Ram, and Ram, the father of Abinadab, and Abinadab, the father of Nashon, and Nashon, the father of Solomon, and Solomon, the father of Boaz by Rahab. Rahab, she's also a Gentile. In fact, she was the prostitute who aided the Israelites who spied on Cana before their conquest. And after Jericho was destroyed, Rahab and her family lived with the Israelites. Now she became a believer. She obviously was no longer a prostitute. And she became an ancestor of the Messiah. So that's Rahab. Guess what? And Boaz, which was Rahab's son, was the father of Obed by Ruth. Ruth's name is even mentioned in the genealogy. And Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David the king. Wow. You see, why does Matthew have that genealogy? Listen to the very first verse of the book of Matthew. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. This has tremendous implications for our worldview. God always keeps his promises. So if I was making that doctrinal point about how the Holy Trinity keeps promises, the narrative I could bring up is the book of Ruth. How sad that some people don't recognize the true application of the book of Ruth. All four chapters have one goal, and that's to point to Jesus Christ. And so God provides a narrative of what actually happened in history so that the promises he made to Abraham would be fulfilled. You have that God as you are a Christian. Look at the tremendous promises God has given to you, that your sins are forgiven, that you're wearing the robe of righteousness. Those are the big two. Because the first takes care of sins you commit, and the second takes care of good works you omit. As well as the hundreds of other promises. I've often said, you can go to any religious bookstore and buy this book. It doesn't matter what religious bookstore, as long as it's called Promises from the Bible. Because those books have nothing in them but Bible texts. Now, perhaps you might run into one of them and you look up marriage and it has that Ruth passage about your God will be my God. That, in my view, is taken out of context because Ruth isn't marrying Naomi. But at least she has a relationship with God. Where did she get this relationship? Well, she was married to Naomi's son for 10 years in the land of Moab. You can only understand how her son would have taught her about the true God. And so she came to faith. But the point I'm trying to make today is it's not sufficient to just know the narratives. You need to know why God says the narratives, repeats the narratives, records the narratives. They always have to do with Jesus. And until you understand how a passage deals with Jesus, you really haven't understood the purpose of the Bible. Who would not have wanted to be on that road to Emmaus with Jesus and the disciples? How many times was he sharing with them the great news of himself, who is coming into the world for the purpose of rescuing us from the kingdom of Satan? That's really good news. And on tomorrow's Law and Gospel, with the help of Pastor Mark Smith, we're going to be taking a look at a hymn. You know, a lot of times pastors should not be involved in political various things if it is not clear from the Bible. that one should be involved. But that doesn't mean that pastors don't get involved with society. And we're going to be taking a look at a hymn under the heading of society. And we're going to share with you what the Bible has to say also about society. And if you listen carefully, and even if you don't, you'll find it also is tied to Jesus. I'm Tom Baker. Thanks for listening to Law and Gospel. Tomorrow with Mark Smith, we're looking forward to be with you. Till then, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel each weekday at this time on Worldwide KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email Law and Gospel at lawandgospel101.com. Views and opinions expressed on Worldwide KFUO may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. If you'd like to comment on programs or topics heard on Worldwide KFUO, write us at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can also leave a question or comment on our comment line at 314-996-1542. We are the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.